Et maintenant, nous avons le plaisir et l'honneur d'écouter le professeur Walid Saleh.
Bon courage.
Oh, thank you. Oh, okay. Good. Thank you.
Qui, après avoir été formé à l'Université américaine de Beyrouth et à Yale, enseigne maintenant à l'Université de Toronto. C'est un des principaux connaisseurs de l'exégèse du Coran, qui a fait des recherches qui ont beaucoup marqué sur les commentaires coraniques de Tharlabi, de Wahdi, de Biqari. Et donc, un grand plaisir de l'avoir ici parmi nous.
Hello everyone, I'm really honored to be invited here. I would like to thank Professor De Roche for this invitation and also Dr. Shahdi for all the trouble he took in organizing this. Thank you. One only needs to open any art history book of Islamic art or a catalog of Quranic manuscripts to be faced with astounding beauty. The quality and the material of these preserved Quran points to their limited use as objects to be handled carefully from the beginning. Or at least, this is the argument that I'm making. These were objects of art, religious artifacts, as well as manuscripts. And most of what has survived comes to us from these kinds of Qurans. High artistic quality on valuable material, expertly copied. The questions I've been interested in presume that this is not the only picture or the state of Quran manuscripts production in the early Islamic history. And as such, I'm interested in the evidence made from absences or from an absence. The question is then one of absence. Where are the common Qurans, the Qurans that were used by common readers? Actually, were there common Qurans? Can one speak of such a category? Were there cheaply copied Qurans? How do we decide if a Quran was such an item, a work intended primarily for use by for consumption by a reader who is not really very well rich, of modest means? Indeed, the question becomes one of portability and of the sitz im Leben of the Quran as a material object. A Friday mosque Quran will be preserved in such a mosque. It will be, in a sense, an object in control of its space and use. You have to go to the mosque. You have to go to the Quran itself. Already, the process of reading this kind of Quran is a ritual and a process that renders the reader less significant every step she or he takes to the mosque. It's mostly a he. It's not that these were monumental Qurans only. It's that they were also well-locked up Qurans, meaning that not everyone has access to these Qurans. These Qurans were thus immovable, so to speak. They were not portable. The very bulkiness of them meant limited portability. Size is then an issue, and it's this size that I think we have to pay attention to it in the history of the manuscripts of the Quran. Not monumental size, but the one we have spoken little about, small Qurans. In a sense, this is a weird lecture. Although I'm talking mostly about explaining monumental Qurans, ultimately my interest is about the small Qurans that we rarely talk about. Yet even the Geniza evidence seems, and by the Geniza I mean the ones that Professor De Roche already talked about, seems to point to a preponderance of large Qurans. That even tattered, disused Qurans were mostly large and of value. There must have been a culture that promoted this kind of Qurans, and we are yet to investigate what were the reasons behind this understanding of the shape of the Quran. So why monumental Qurans? By the way, this is a question that Georges Alain would... I'm really working the same questions he raised. The question of the size of the Quran is thus not a minor detail here. I'm rather arguing it's an issue of central significance, for it points to who was in control. It describes a power relation that is rarely addressed in the study of the early manuscripts. The very nature of the book determines its use, and such becomes an aspect that is implicit and complicit in what I've termed the theology of reading. So there's a theology of reading that determines the shape of the material object that we have. Who gets to carry the book? A human being or a mosque? The size of the Quran actually defines the history of the Quran manuscripts. This is then the historical question that needs to be asked. When did Qurans become portable? When did they cease to be monumental? And by portable, I mean user-friendly, such that pedestrian reader was the intended target for its consumption. Was there actually such a phase in the Quran as a book? And if so, how early? Now, the early religious traditions was against portable Qurans, small Qurans. This is indeed astonishing, for why did that matter to them? Now, if we read any of the manuals about the history of the Quran, such that I take, for example, Kitab al-Masahif ibn Abi Dawood, we can already see chapters on, quote-unquote, hating to write the Quran smallish. Fikrahat al-Quran saghiran. The traditions reported are announced on two exhortations. On the one hand, an order to magnify the Quran, making it both grand and large, playing on the word to honor and to make large as homonyms. عَظِّمُ الْقُرْآنِ, make the Quran عَظِيم, both, it really means size, but it's really to honor it. And the second, asking the believers not to write the Quran on something small. Early Muslims hated, karihu, to write the Quran on smallish. ما يسمى تصغير القرآن. The major protagonist in these reports is Ali, Imam Ali. So basically most of these reports go back to the fourth caliph. He's the one who's reported as saying that the Quran should be not be written on small things or made small. So now this codex, this masahif or mushaf, the manual seems to imply should not be small, saghir, should always be large. Now the size of the Quran was one of many traits that these books were saying that early generation of Muslims wanted the Quran to be. They hated many things that could be done to the Quran. As such, we have a list of idealized a list of items that produced an idealized codex, already worked out, a code of standards that, as usual, were more broken than kept, but nevertheless, still standards. Their normative value is immense and is actually reflected in the early Kufic layer of manuscript. They are as such articulated as an aesthetic view, if not very dogmatic vision of how a codex ought to be. Portability is here then a theological issue. The tradition seems to imply that the very act of writing its small format is decreasing in its greatness. But portability is also intimately tied to the concept of ما يسمى حمل القرآن, or the act of carrying the Quran. If inversely, carrying the Quran حمل and preserving it or memorizing it, حفظ القرآن, becomes two operative theological terms that seems to be influencing the codex. These two words, حمل and حفظ, became the mode of defining a complex idealized relationship to the Quran, a complex ritualized pose the believer takes to the Quran, where the Quran location is internalized, in a sense, you carry it in your heart, في القلوب, أو يحفظ في القلوب. The Quran was a codex, but it was carried by the believer through memorization, and transferred internally. The Quran thus became enmeshed in a complex material and ideological conceptualization that sometimes has nothing to do with the reality on the ground. There were also horror mirror image of these two idealized states. So we have Haml and Hifz, and then we have the opposite, forgetfulness and lifting up, Nisyan and Naz' al-Quran or Raf' al-Quran. These, although apocalyptic, but they were already functioning in the milieu of what the Quran is. That ideological matrix of memorization and carrying is actually what made the physical codex present in reality. So it really affected this. The massiveness of the Quran pointed to the impossibility of it disappearing in an act of divine displeasure. So in a sense, you have to see bulkiness as against another way of preventing apocalypse, of preventing the Quran of being rufi'a. Now, portability was also subversive on an ideological plane furthermore. Portability was an imitation of memorization. And here really is the main theme I'm trying to emphasize. For if you fail to carry the Quran in your heart, you failed in the task. In a sense, you cannot carry it in its bulkness, right? So a portable Quran became a carried Quran. So here you could see the trajectory. Ultimately, the Kufic moment with its monumentality will prove a failure insofar as ultimately not everyone can memorize the Quran, and a portable Quran becomes an ersatz for the act of memorizing the Quran. So in a sense, we have to see two tensions, and this will point to the end game of the Hijazi period. So the small Qurans was thus a theological issue for early Muslims, for it both hinted at God's displeasure, but also at a solution for a problem for everyday Muslim. I mean, if you cannot memorize the Quran, the best thing you can do is having a pocket Quran. It was both a tempting solution and a subversive solution at the same time. So small Qurans are thus a transgressive product, and they exhibit a characteristic that was included in a long list of traits that early Muslim wanted their Quran not to exhibit. And this is really an important point. The early Muslims, let me sum up, worded their Quran without headings, without gold, without diacritics, without verse numbers, without vowel markers. They wanted them stripped, naked, bare, and they also did not want the codex to be used in communal prayers. So in a sense, even the attempt to use it in functionality, the imam of prayer should not open the Quran and read from it. So there was a hatred to do that. What was it for then? If it's not all of this, well, what is it of its function then? What was the big Quran for? Early Muslims have a term for this idealized state of how the codex should appear, actually. They called it Tajreed al-Masahif. So already what I'm saying is we have a theology of aesthetics that understood the Kufic moment. They called it Tajreed al-Masahif. The codex of the Quran was, as it were, intended to be non-functional, unusable, abstracted. Why would this be the idealized state of a codex? Like, why do you want to produce something? And let me point you this. Up till now, we don't have an explanation why the Hijazi style is easier to read than the Kufic style. You would say that, right? I would say that it's easier to read the Ma'il script than the highly idealized Hijazi style. So why would you, if the script is to make reading easier, why are we heading in the opposite direction? So the stripped codex. If one is then to find the term for this conceptualization of the ideal codex in early Islam, it can thus be found under the term Tajreed al-Masahif, stripped bare the codices, which was used in the early Islamic histories of the Quran. This was really the idealized term. Another phrase used in the studies on the early histories of the Quran is, do not dress it with that which is not part of it. The term is talbisu. La talbisu bihi ma laysa minhu. Which can also mean to confuse. The term labasa can also mean to be confused. So don't address it, but also don't confuse it with what which is in it. The Quran was made different. The codex is a different order of thing. It's to be kept naked of things. And then, لَا تَخْلِطُ بِهِ مَا لَيْسَ مِنْهُ. That's another term. So already we're having like a whole set of terms to keep the Quran away from certain contamination. The Quran, these idealized statements are implying, did not have any of these things. It was not small, it was not pointed, it was not this, ever, all, everything. It doesn't have a verse ending, etc. These, we are told, were all not of it. ليس منه. And then when a certain scholar was asked, why does he hate the numbers, the takhmis and ta'ashir? He said, I don't want any later Muslims to come and think this was from God. So that's one explanation. The question is, how did they know that this is how the Quran should be? Or more pointedly, what were they thinking when they claimed that this is how the Quran should look like? So let me go to the heavenly tablet. For a few years now, I've been ventured an explanation to this aesthetics of early Quran, or at least a theoretical understanding of what was going on that can make sense of all of these situations. I would like to show that this theory that makes a lot of sense, and more importantly, it ties the theology and the etiology of the Quran with its material coming into being. And as such, I would like to give back to theology its role as a determinative factor in any religious art history writing and theory. The argument I'm making is that we have given scant attention to the rich notions about the Quran and the manner of how it was supposed to be produced as a codex in early Islam. We seem to have studied the material Quran without any serious attention to the theology about the Quran. We have to remember that the most serious fitna or inquisition in early Islam was about the status of the Quran, khalq al-Quran. Now, in a pioneering study about the geometry of the Quran, Alain Georges stipulated that there was a harmonious geometry. So the first time, this was an article, The Geometry of Early Quranic Manuscripts, and he stipulated in this article that there is a... Where are they? There you are. So in a sense, there's already a very strict geometry to the page of the Quran that you could see in these early Kufic manuscripts. It's proportional, it's geometrical, and it's basically bespeaks a very deliberate act of presentation. And here he has many examples, but I'm just showing you. So in this pioneering article, George Alain stipulated that there was a harmonious geometric ratio grid that governed the look of a Kufic manuscript. And here is his conclusion from page 104. I think here. Let me read it. The question remains, how did such an elaborate system come to underline Quranic calligraphy? What were its roots? Under what circumstances did it emerge? So this is really one of the, in art history, one of the most important questions. How did we end up here? Now, his solution will come later on in his book, The Rise of Islamic Calligraphy. George's solution to the answer of this revolutionary script is to compare it to the Dome of the Rock and compare it to monumental inscriptions, and eventually to tie it to the Greek classical aesthetic theory of proportions, as first formulated by Plato and Tiamis in the dialogue. He concludes that the ratio we find in the Quran codices were mimicking the monumental architectural building and proportions, and as such was unique and unprecedented. He, however, remained puzzled as to how this leap from monumental inscription, which is Greek and classical, transformed itself to the Arabic Quran page, especially a move that was not straightforward insofar as monumental Arabic buildings were not Greek-inspired as such in the classical mode. They could be Byzantine-inspired, but they were not fully in that Greek mode. So the solution proposed by George is based on the notion that it inspired by Greek classical notions of harmony, as I said that. Now, the explanation remains, in a sense, tenuous, and even George Alain himself admit to it, that in a sense, all the Arabic sources that point to such a harmony is already late, from the late period, from the translation movement. So in a sense, anything Greek is already pretty much late to explain to us the Kufic. And then more importantly, the two scribal traditions that could have influenced the Kufic Quran, the Greek and the Syriac, have no signs of this monumentality. So in a sense, we have a double bind. Neither the Arabic architectural buildings is showing that, nor the Greek and The Syriac writing shows this. So I'm here proposing to resolve the issue, since Alain Georges himself was really very hesitant about this, the vector of influence. What I'm proposing is that this form that the material codes took was rooted in an Islamic, if not Quranic, notion of what scripture should look like. Islamic art was and does have roots also in a new theology that ultimately shaped the form of the Quran. Now, the locus classicus for this theory comes from Quran 85:21-22. The Arabic is بَلْ هُوَ قُرْآنٌ مَجِيدٌ فِي لَوْحٍ مَحْفُوظٍ. It's a glorious Quran preserved in a tablet. But also, more importantly, the Quran does reference to the tablets of Moses. We have in 7:145, God's explicitly saying that he gave Moses the tablets. But then also in 7:150 and 154, the tablets, when they fall, they don't break. So they, in a sense, there's still a reference to the tablets as physical objects, as inscribed material. So already, from the very early on, Muslims have a theory of what the Quran was. It was inscribed in the tablets of heaven, Allah al-Mahfud. There was already a full-fledged theory of there was a celestial pen that has written this Ur-Quran. And this the Quran on earth was a replica of this Lawh al-Mahfuz. And here is the monumentality. So basically, what Muslims were trying to reproduce in the Kufic is really the look of an inscription. So in a sense, this is you're reproducing really a lapidary or a monumental inscription on the page. And that's what they were trying to do. Monumentality was thus a shadow haunting the early artistic creation of the Quran. There was a need to really reproduce on earth this theological Quran. Now, why would that be? I think, in a sense, if God knows everything and he is completely perfect, the question is, why does he need writing? So in a sense, the celestial tablet would have the bare minimum of a writing system, such that it doesn't really there to be read in as much as to evoke. So in a sense, what is on the tablet is really evoking the Quran that is in the mind of God, that is eternal, right? And that's what Muslims were trying to recreate, the relationship between God and the tablets and their relationship to the Quran. And that's what I mean by a theology of reading. They've already memorized the Quran, and this was not to be read in as much as to evoke what is already in them. That's why, in a sense, you can only read this quickly if you already have the Quran in your mind. If you have the Quran in your mind, you wait for a moment, and then illa qalilan, and then you start, following it. But only if you already have the Quran in mind. So that's really what this Kufic is doing. It's for gazing and not for reading. The Kufic moment, let me finish. The Kufic moment is thus a hubris moment. It's a moment out of a conflict that was really brewing. So how do you present the Quran? And I think it's very much tied to the new competition with other scriptures that were there, that the Quran is, in a sense, a heavenly book. A moment where theology triumphs at its most extreme and austere artistic manifestation. In a sense, this is not what writing system should be, right? And we know that eventually we'll start having dots. All what the Muslims hated about the Mus'haf will creep in eventually, right? It was almost a moment impossible to sustain and soon became as mysterious as it was incomprehensible. Why was the script of the Quran striving to be unreadable and only readable if you already know the Quran? This is the heart of the matter, and to this day I've never found a satisfactory explanation Why was the script used to evoke and not to facilitate reading? The notion that this could be explained by the practice in chancellery and professional fiscal and administrative scribe is untenable. Sorry there, Etienne. That they left dotting because they all could read, which is not true. They did use diacritic. So when if you look at the papyri, when there is a foreign name, it is dotted. When there is a mistake, like something that you need to clarify, you will have diacritics. Actually, the first bilingual dated papyri has diacritics, the one from Vienna, right, the 22. This aesthetic sensibility of the Kufic Quran went against other fundamental drives that were early in early Islam. So this is one theology of reading, but there was another theology of reading, which is the accessible Quran, the Quran that could be read by all. And that would that will start undermining the Kufic, eventually totally replacing it. The Quran has to be accessible. And this was a major drive in the early theology about the Quran. And soon pointing, voweling, verse counting, section division, everything was unstoppable. The Quran was to be made accessible. And the marching of this drive can be seen already. The Hijazi script is ironically, I mentioned that. The Kufic moment was a radical moment, thus, in which a radical notion of what scripture is was artistically manufactured. Thank you.